All right, Dabotai, welcome to another edition of our Touro College sessions that come from time to time. Not enough, but nonetheless, we have a special edition, being that we are, I guess, tonight's Wednesday night, so we're Erev Hanukkah. We're in striking distance. We're less than a week away, so I'd like to direct my comments to the upcoming Hag. Not too much rabbinical literature, at least from the Mishnah and the Talmud, regarding Hanukkah. We have a couple of pages in Masechet Shabbat. There is no Masechet Hanukkah, technically, in Shas. It's not a Torah Sheba'al Peh heavy holiday, in the sense that, again, we don't have too much Gemariyot or Mishnayot, as opposed to, let's say, Purim, where you have Masechet Megillah, a Masechet dedicated to the laws of Purim. But that doesn't stop the later rabbis from having a lot of Torah that's related to Hanukkah. And every holiday has its question, and Hanukkah is no exception. There is the famous question of the Bet Yosef regarding Hanukkah. And the question is that it's an eight-day holiday. And the old tradition is that when the Hashmonaim came to rededicate the Beit HaMikdash, they noticed that all the oils were defiled by the Yevanim. And therefore, they needed to light the menorah. They couldn't find kosher oil. And they found a pach shemen, a jug, a flask that had the seal of the Kohen Gadol on it. And from that flask, a miracle happened, and it lasted for 8 days. And the Beit Yosef's question was, well, it seems that in the flask there was enough for 1 day. So the first day wasn't a miracle. First day was, they had enough for 1 day, and it lasted 1 day. Now, the subsequent days were the miracle. So therefore, why is it an 8-day holiday if the miracle was only 7 days? I know you know that question. That question is known as the question of the Bet Yosef. Although, actually, earlier Rishonim have asked this question. The Tosfot HaRosh asked it, so that's before the Bet Yosef, but for some reason he gets the credit as the one that asked the question. Now, I had a book many years ago called Ner Leme'ah. It was a book that offered no less than 100 answers to this question. Subsequently, somebody gave me a book with 500 answers. I mean, so basically, whatever you're going to say is probably an answer to this question. I mean, it's, in this case, we say, you know, the answer is better than the question. If it's so easy to answer this question, how good of a question could it be in the first place? But nonetheless, the Bet Yosef offers three answers, which I'll give them to you quickly. But before I give you the answers of the Bet Yosef, I must point out that it's only a question premised on the Girsa that we have in the Gemara Shabbat Chaf Aleph Amud Bet. The Girsa that we have is, and they found a Pach Shemen that had enough to light for 1 day, and the miracle was that it lasted for 8 days. But there's a different Girsa from the Geonim that actually say, and they found a Pach Shemen that did not have even enough for 1 night. So if you have that Girsa, that answers the question of the Beit Yosef. The miracle on the first night was that they didn't have enough for the first night either. And therefore, it lasted the full night. So therefore, it all depends on the Girsa. So Kandere, the Beit Yosef had our Girsa, and it was asking according to that Shita. Now, I had a question. I mean, according to the Geonim, that they found the Pach Shemen that didn't have even enough for the first night. Why would they fill jugs that do not have the minimum shi'ud? I mean, they know that the shi'ud of the menorah takes a certain amount of oil, so why would they create a a jug in the Beit HaMikdash that does not have the right amount of oil for the menorah. And that assumes that this oil that they found was menorah oil. And if they made, like today we have those prepackaged, cups. So, imagine you went and bought the cups and they told you, well, sorry that we know the halakha says it have to last for half hour, but we only put 25 minutes of oil in the cups. You say, what kind of racket is this over here? You know it has to last for half hour, put the right amount of oil. So, the Beit HaMikdash, they knew that these cups, these flasks need to fill up the menorah, so why wouldn't they put the right amount? Unless we say that the flask that they found, the pak shemen that they found, was not initially designated for menorah oil. So then what could have been designated? There's only one other thing in the Beit HaMikdash we use oil for, and that is menahot. So it must have been a oil that was dedicated for the mincha. Well, who's mincha? Well, ask yourself another question. The pak shemen had the seal of the Kohen Gadol on it. Since when does the Kohen Gadol serve as the mashkiach of the Beit HaMikdash that he gives his supervision to the oil? We take it for granted because that's the way we learned it when we were young. Oh, and they found the pak shemen with the chotam of the Kohen Gadol. Now, I don't have a problem if the OU is giving kashrut or the other agencies, but the Kohen Gadol, I think, is overqualified for giving a seal now to the oil of the Beit HaMikdash. That's not one of his jobs. If you look at the job description of the Kohen Gadol, he does a lot of things. But one of his jobs is not to provide kashrut for the oils. So why was that oil in the first place? Chotam be chotamo shel Kohen Gadol, which is kind of strange. You have an answer? I'd love to know the answer to this question if you have an answer.
Could it be it was a Shem HaMishcha for the king?
Shem HaMishcha for the king. And that answers what question? That answers that it's oil. Okay, it was oil anyway. The question I want to know is, why was had the seal of the Kohen Gadol?
My answer would suggest that it's not the oil of the mincha.
I accept very well. It's the oil of the king. Why is the Kohen sealing the oil for the king? Again, is that a job description of a Kohen Gadol?
No.
You don't know, so I don't know either. So now we got to go back. But you'll answer the first question somehow, and that's why there wasn't enough oil for the menorah, because you know from somewhere that the oil that they anoint kings has less than the oil that's needed for the menorah. Well, if you go according to the answer that I saw, according to the Shabbat Shelmi, he says a beautiful answer. He says that there's a special mincha that is brought by the Kohen Gadol every day. It's called Minhat Havitin Shel Kohen Gadol. And this mincha is only brought by a Kohen Gadol. And it has to come from his money. It's not paid by the Terumat HaLishka, by the treasury. So he must pay for it himself. And the Torah tells us how many lugin of oil are in this mincha. 3 lug. Oh, so once you say that, it's very, very plausible to say that this pak shemen that had the chotam of the Kohen Gadol was the private oil of the Kohen Gadol for his minhat havitin. That explains why it had the chotam of the Kohen Gadol, because it was his. And that explains why there wasn't enough for the menorah, because how much oil does it need to fill the entire menorah for one night's oil? Very, very good. Each cup gets a half a log. So therefore, to light the menorah, you need 3.5 lugin. But for the Minhat Habitin of the Kohen Gadol, all you need is 3 lugin. And therefore, it works out according to that Girsa of the Geonim that they found the Pak Shemen that didn't even have enough to last for one night, because this was Shemen of Menachot, and this was for the Shemen of the Menorah, but that's the best they had. And therefore, there was a miracle even on the first night, and therefore, we don't have the question of the Bet Yosef. Are we clear on this? Mm-hmm. Good.
Why is there a seal of the Kohen Gadol?
Why? Because it was his.
It was the Kohen Gadol himself.
It was his. He put it in private property. Mm. Private property. This is his mind. So they don't mix it up with other things. Because the deen is that the Minhat Havitin must come from the Kohen Gadol's private money. He must bring the oil himself. He can't use it from the public funds. That explains why there was a chotam of Kohen Gadol on him. So that's but that bypasses the whole question. That takes away the whole fun of Hanukkah, because the fun of Hanukkah is to answer the question. But if you tell me there's a text that you know, it undermines the whole kushya. So therefore, you know, all those books and all those pimpulim are out the window. I did see another interesting answer. Just before I get to the answer of the Beit Yosef, it's from the Hatam Sofer. Hatam Sofer says that when they got to the Beit HaMikdash, it was too in disarray, and it took them time in order to reestablish and purify the temple. So they couldn't light the menorah in the normal place, which is inside the temple. Instead, they had to light it outside. How does he know they lit it outside? So he has a ra'aya from the Sidur. What does it say in the Sidur in the Al HaNisim? V'acharkach ba'u banecha, nedbir betecha, they came into the temple, ufinu et echalecha, and they had to clean out the echal, v'hedliku nerot v'hasrot kodshecha. Interesting. They lit the menorah v'hasrot kodshecha. Hasrot means in the chatzer, which means they lit it outside. Which to me is very, very nice, because that indicates to me that there was a pirsum hanes in the lighting of the menorah at the time of Hanukkah of the Beit HaMikdash more than normal, because normally the menorah was lit inside where nobody could see it. But on the Hanukkah, since they lit it b'hasrot kodshecha, everybody was able to see it, and that might explain why there's such a mitzvah of pirsum hanes in our time, because that's the way it was done at the time of the Hashmonaim. But what does the Hatam Sofer gain with this answer? What he gains is it's true they had enough oil in the jug for one night. But that's if you're lighting inside. But if you're lighting outside, the menorah is going to take more fuel because of the wind factor. And therefore there was a miracle even on the first night, that even though normally the menorah should have taken more fuel because it was lit outside, it still lasted the whole night. So there were the jugs that they filled up. It had enough for one night when you're lighting under normal circumstances, under normal conditions. But once they were lighting outside, there was no way that this oil would be able to fuel the menorah for the whole night. And the miracle was that it did. Understand that answer? That's the way the Hatam Sofer says. Now, the Beit Yosef's answers, let's just go through those for a second. He gives three answers, and they're not easy answers. Although they sound simple, but they're not easy. The first answer, he says, is they found the Pak Shemen, and they knew that they're going to have to make this last for 8 days. Because they knew that it would take 4 days to go to the place, Motzah, where they would make the oil, and then 4 days to come back. So they know they have to figure out some way to stretch this oil for 8 days. So what did they do? They took an eighth of the oil, and they lit it on the first night. Oh, so if you tell me they took an eighth of the oil, so that was a miracle, that the eighth of the oil was able to last the entire night. Okay, that's a miracle. And that's a miracle actually every night, because every night they were just taking an eighth of the oil. The only question on that answer is a few questions. Number one, I mean, we have a general rule that says, En sum kim al hanes. You can't go into relying on miracles. And here, if they took an eighth of the oil, it means they're going in relying that there's going to be a miracle. You had enough for one night. Wouldn't it be the law that says, okay, listen, I can't worry about tomorrow. You have enough for one night, follow the halakha today, and Mashiach will come tomorrow. I can't worry about tomorrow. So for the fact that they put an eighth in, so the question, what gives them the right? What gives them the right to do that? Unless you want to say that they had good indication that miracles were going to happen from the fact that they found the Pak Shemen. Let's talk this out. I mean, the Yevanim had a concentrated effort b'timi'u et kol ha-shemanim. That's something that they did intentionally. It's not that just that was a random thing. They went looking for shemanim to metameh. They didn't want to select the menorah for some reason. So the fact that they had a concentrated effort to be metameh all the shemanim, and this Pak Shemen eluded them, And then it eluded the Greeks, but it didn't elude the Hashmonim when they came in. So they felt that that was a tremendous Hashkaha B'Hashem. That, look at this, this is a Pach Shem, and we're in the game. So that when they saw the Hashkaha was on their side, so to speak, so therefore they said, you know what, if Hashem showed us this Pach, it means it's miraculous. Therefore we could assume that Hashem's going to make another miracle for us.
That's not considered
Ensom. No, because they had reason to sumich on the Nes. They had reason to be sumich. Ensom Hila Nes stam. But if already you see that the Hashkaha is at your back, so therefore already it was fair to assume. But I think there's a much easier answer to this to the answer of the Beit Yosef. When he says that every night only an eighth lit, what he could mean to say is they put the whole thing in the menorah, following the halakha. And when they came back the next morning, only an eighth was burnt. So therefore, we have no problem. And then in the second day, another eighth went. And then another eighth went. So they put as much as they were able to put in the menorah. Doesn't mean they put an eighth in. They put the whole thing in, and only an eighth was burnt. So that will solve that. They weren't so mekal anes. They did it the right way. And then Hashem made the miracle as such. And I think there's a famous Maharsha that uses this answer of the Beit Yosef to explain the Shita of Beit Shammai that everybody struggles with. You know, in the Masechet Shabbat, we have a mahluk at how you're supposed to light the menorah. You know, like Beit Hillel or like Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel is the, you know, conventional way that we do it. The first light one, then two, then three, Ma'alim Bakodesh, and you go up. And Beit Shammai actually has an anticlimactic way of lighting the menorah. The first night, you light eight. And by the time you get to the last night of Hanukkah, Shmini Shel Hanukkah, Zot Hanukkah, there's one candle up. So for some reason, he decided to go down. And the Gemara is searching for some reasons for Beit Shammai. But the Maharsha says in the Gemara, well, based on the Beit Yosef, we can understand, because if they put all the oil in the flask on the first night, so you had on the first night 8/8, and then the second night you had 7/8, and then 6/8, and then 5. So the miracle actually descended according to that first answer. And Beit Shammai is saying to commemorate the way the miracle happened, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So therefore, that's how you light, because that was the way the Nes happened according to the first answer of the Beit Yosef. So that's a nice them is in Beit Shammai. Second answer and the third answer of the Beit Yosef are similar. The second answer is that when they filled up the menorah with all the oil, when they came back the next morning, they found the pach was still full. So it's like Baba Sali's ada. You know, he kept on pouring it, and the flask didn't end. So that was the miracle. And then the third answer of the Beit Yosef, which I said is similar, is that they filled the menorah, and when they came the next morning, the menorah was still lit, which means the menorah still had the oil in it. So either the menorah remained in the flask, or the menorah remained in the menorah. It's two ways of saying the same thing, just where was the oil remaining. Either when they woke up in the morning, the menorah was in the flask that poured again, or the menorah was still filled with the oil. Nothing receded. And if it was a miracle, the fact that it didn't consume any of the oil. So those are the three answers. The problem with the last two answers of the Beit Yosef is that his whole question was, what was the miracle on the first night? And he answered it. He said the miracle was when they woke up the next morning, they realized that on the first night it was miracle oil. It lit the whole night without consuming. So retroactively, when they woke up, they realized what happened the night before was a miracle. And that's what happened every single night. When they lit the next night, when they woke up and saw the oil was still there, that became a miracle, retroactively. The next night, and so on and so forth. But the Pri Hadash asks on the Beit Yosef that, well, all you did is shift the question now to the last night. Because it comes out that on the last night there was no miracle. Because on the last night they had oil, and it lit. And when they woke up after the eighth day, what happened? There was no oil. It was finished. The miracle was over. So therefore, now the question of the Beit Yosef is a new question based on this. Why is it again an eight-day holiday? Instead of asking that the first day wasn't a miracle, now we can ask the Beit Yosef the eighth day wasn't a miracle. Understand why? What happened? On the seventh day, they lit. The next morning, the jug was still full. Beautiful. So they realized that the night before, on the seventh night when they lit, was a miracle. It didn't consume. Now they had oil. So what did they do with that oil? They lit the eighth night. So they had oil ready for the eighth night. And when they lit the oil on the eighth night, it lit. No chedush on that. And it consumed. They had enough. So what was the miracle on the eighth night? So therefore, I mean, the Beit Yosef, he just shifts the question from the first day to the last. That's the Pi'ah Adash's question. And then the Pi'ah Adash has a tremendous chedush. It is a tremendous chedush. And he has ra'ayot for what he's going to say. And his ra'ayot are very, very strong. He says, therefore, I concede to the Beit Yosef's question, and I say, you're right. The first night wasn't a miracle. Because they had enough oil. And the miracle of the oil really was only 7 days. Very good. So then what are you celebrating on the first night? The first night, we're not commemorating the miracle of the oil. We're commemorating the miracle of the victory of the war. Big Hadush. That means he now has turned the eight nights into Hanukkah to two different kavanot. On the first night, when you stand in front of the menorah with your family, you have to say, Rabbi Isai, we're now about to light the menorah. And all the kids are going to say, yeah, because they found oil. Hey, don't talk about the oil. It's tomorrow night. Don't talk about the oil. Tonight is the first night, B'ri Adash. So what are we doing tonight? No, tonight's the war. The war is the first night. Because there was no miracle on the first night. On the second night, when you get it, Rabbi Isai, we're lighting the menorah, yeah, because of the war. No, yeah, that was last night. And tonight we're doing it because of the miracle. They found the oil, the last of the... So it's two different kavanot. That means he agrees. You're right, Beit Yosef. There wasn't a miracle on the first night. And the reason why we're lighting on the first night is not to commemorate the miracle of the shemen. The first night to commemorate, there was a war. By the way, that answers a good question because we really don't do anything on Hanukkah to commemorate the war. Except Al HaNisim, we make some mention of Hoda'ah. But according to B'Hadash, you're actually doing a ma'aseh, sha'aseh HaNisim la'avotinu b'zman hazeh. But he proves it. Now listen to this proof. He's, I'll prove I'm right. There's a big question why you call the holiday Hanukkah. So most of the Yishtunim learn Hanukkah Melashon Chinuch. Because they rededicated the second temple. So there was a Chinuch HaBayit, Hanukkah. But the Ran learns Hanukkah, like we learned when we were in first grade, Hanukh HaFeh. What does Hanukh HaFeh mean? That they rested from the war on the 25th. That means they were fighting the Yevanim. When did the war end? On the 25th of Kislev. Oh, very nice. And then when did they light the menorah? Right, they must have lit the menorah on the 26th. Hanukh HaFeh. That night they came and they lit the menorah on the 26th. So then the question is, but we don't light on the 26th, we light on the 25th. You know why? Because the reason why we're lighting on the 25th is Hanukh HaFeh, because of the war. That's why we light a day early. Although in the times of the Beit HaMikdash, they must have lit on the 26th, because that's when the war was over. So why do we preempt the light a day early? Because we're celebrating the Hanukh HaFeh, as it's called, Hanukkah. And therefore we come on HaFeh, and we light the menorah in order to remember that that nes. So that would be the chedush of the Pri Hadash. Okay. So those are basic answers. Now I want to go to the parasha for a minute and say a chedush. Maybe a new way to answer the Beit Yosef's question. So we're reading these parashiyot of Yaakov Avinu. There's a midrash that quotes a pasuk in Iyov. The pasuk is, Lo shalavti ולא שקטתי ולא נחתי ויבוא רוגז. I'll say it again. לא שלבתי. לא שלבתי. I didn't have peace. שלווה. לא שלבתי. יעקב סטוק. לא שלבתי. ולא שקטתי. I did not have tranquility. ולא נחתי. I did not rest. ויבוא רוגז, and the peril and the troubles came to me. These are four situations that Yaakov is referring to. So the Midrash says, Lo shalavti in the story of Lavan, Velo shakati in the story of Esav, Velo nachti in the story of Dinah, Vayavoroges in the story of Yosef. We're going to read in this week's parasha, Bikesh Yaakov lishev v'shalva. Borei Olam says, what do you mean? There's no shalva for the tzaddikim. Miyad takfo alav rogzo shel Yosef. Rogzo shel Yosef v'yavo rogez. So the pesukim are talking about over here the four different challenges, we'll call them, that Yaakov Avinu endured. Lavan. From Lavan he went to Esav. From Esav he had the story of Dinah, which we read in last week's parasha. And from Dinah he has the story of this week's parasha, to rogzo shel Yosef. And whenever you see four troubles or four situations of stress, exactly, the Achamim always are going to relate it that this is a precursor to the four exiles that the Jewish people eventually were going to endure as a nation. Ma'aseh Avot Siman Labanim. So if Yaakov Avinu goes through, you know, four situations, rest assured, we are going to go through them as well. So therefore, Lo shalafti, that's galut bavel. Velo shakati, ze galut parasumadai. Velo nachti, galut yavan, vayavo roges, ze malchut romi. Now we have to go back and see how each one of these situations that Yaakov Avinu was in actually is the forerunner of one of the eventual galuyot. So let's go to the first one. The first one, Yaakov Avinu found himself in Laban's house. Depending on how you look at the map, it's possible that Lavan lived in Bavel. And therefore, for the fact that Yaakov Avinu went down to Lavan's house, so that could be the precursor of Galut Bavel. And then what happens? He comes out to Esav. Now what happened after Galut Bavel? It was Parasumadai. Parasumadai, we know, is Haman. And we know that Esav is the great-great-grandfather of Haman. And then with that whole situation with Esav and Yaakov is already hinting to us the events of Parasumadai. There's the Mazim. Hatsileni na miyad. Hatsileni na miyad is Rashi Tevot Haman, which Yaakov Avinu was already alluding to, not only what's happening today, but what's happening tomorrow. Furthermore, we know that Yaakov Avinu, alav shalom, when he sees Esav, he bows to him. It says that he bows to Esav. And it says that the only one that didn't bow was Binyamin. And the Gemara says, because Binyamin didn't bow, so therefore as a result of that, the Beit HaMikdash was built in his chilek. Now how do they know that Binyamin wasn't the one that bowed? The Pasuk says, Ahad Asar Yeladav. It says when he came in front of Esav, it says he bowed with Ahad Asar Yeladav. So the Gemara asks, Bidina Hechanaita, where was Dinah? So she was in a box. So therefore, that's why it's 11 and Dinah's not there. Now, how did the Gemara know, says the Gaon of Vilna, that Dinah was missing? Maybe one of the other tribes was missing. Maybe why did the Gemara say v'naftali hechanaya? How did the Gemara know to ask where was Dina? I don't know where was God. So he says they knew that none of the other tribes were missing because if the other tribes are missing, that means they didn't bow to Esav, and the Beit HaMikdash could have been built in their chelik. From the fact that the Beit HaMikdash was only built in the chelik of Binyamin, that means all the other tribes must have been present and bowed. And therefore, when the Pasuk says, Ahad Asad Yeladav, the Gemara is asking, hey, where was Dinah? Because all the other tribes must have been there. It's Binyamin that wasn't there. Have you heard what the Gemara of Vilna says?
No.
Amazeh, no. That was a rhetorical question. What do you mean? The pasuk says. The pasuk says. I'll explain it again. The pasuk says that when they came in front of Esav, who bowed in front of Esav? Yaakov, ve'ahad asad yiladav, and has 11 children. So far, good. Now we don't know who the 11 children are. We're assuming, well, somebody's missing because he has 12 children. So it's 11. Who's missing? So the Gemara asks, Vidina Echanaita. Where was Dina? What do you mean where was Dina? We know Binyamin wasn't there, honey. We know Binyamin wasn't there. Binyamin for sure wasn't there. Binyamin wasn't born. No problem. But the Gemara is asking, where was Dina? And I'm asking, who says Dina was? Maybe where was Naphtali? I didn't know Dina was missing. Maybe God was missing. Think about us. V'dina hechanaita. There's 11. So maybe Dina was there. One of the other tribes was out there. So Gomer Vilna proves that all the boys must have been there, because if one of the other boys wasn't there, the Beit HaMikdash could have been built in his chelik. Because the rule was that Binyamin got his Beit HaMikdash section only because he didn't bow, and therefore the Gemara knew all the boys were present. Therefore, Dina must have been missing. Question, honey. The main part, which is the Kodesh Kodashim. The main part.
How do we know that Yehuda was missing?
No, the main part, which is the Shekhinah part, was in Binyamin. Shekhinah part of the Kodesh Kodashim is Binyamin. That's the part we're talking about. If it would have said Banav, then we wouldn't have a She'ila Bechla, but it said Yiladav. So Yiladav can include Dina. Now, question? Wait, let's go further. So now, whether he didn't have a Nisayon or not, Mitziut, he didn't do it. And you cannot have the Beit HaMikdash, which represents the Ahdut of Hashem, built in a chelik of somebody that already can bow to somebody else. Binyamin, by default, because he wasn't there. But Lamasa, whether it's a Zechutim or it's a Mitziut, he didn't bow. So therefore, he is the only one that has the worthiness, let's say, whether he earned the worthiness or didn't earn the worthiness, that we can debate. But he's the only one that doesn't have that flaw of bowing. Now, it's very significant, because later on, we would have a story, again, that has to do with bowing. Since the second peril of Yaakov, when he's with Esav, is connected Parasu Madai, the whole story of Mordechai and Haman has to do with bowing. And the pasuk says, Mordechai lo yichra velo yishtahaveh. He wouldn't bow. Now, why wouldn't Mordechai bow? Because which Shevet does Mordechai come from? Binyamin. And then we're like, listen, I didn't bow to your grandfather, and now I'm not bowing to you either. And the Kubalim say that actually, a little deeper, they say that actually Yaakov needed a rectification for bowing to Haman. And then when they say Mordechai came back as the Gilgul of Yaakov, and Haman was the Gilgul of Esav, and therefore Mordechai this time says, last time I bowed down to you, but now I'm making the rectification and I'm not bowing. So you see, there's direct connections between Parasu Madai and Yaakov and Esav. Furthermore, the Pasuk says that when he went to fight the angel of Esav, Vayavor, it says he crossed over the Nahal, the river. Remember, he crossed Ma'abad Yabok, he crossed over the river. If you look in Megillah, Gemara Megillah, I think page 16, it says in the Pasuk when they made the fast day, Vayavor Mordechai. Oh, it says Vayavor Etanahal, that's by Yaakov. And by Mordechai, it says Vayavor Mordechai. And the Gemara says, what did he do? He says he crossed the river in order to go to the Jews on the other side. So you see, there's a similarity again. And both crossed the river in order to accomplish their objectives. Now we get Tadas lo shalavti velo shakati velo nahti. Now we're right, what happened right after the story of Esav, the story of Dinah. Now let's talk about the story of Dinah for a minute. What happens? But it said Dinah. Dinah goes out. She goes out to to see what's going on in the marketplaces of Shechem. Come Shechem ben Hamor, Hamor ben Hamor, and he sees Dinah, and right away comes along and he has a heshek for her and a desire, and he takes her. Well, he takes Dinah, and the pasuk comes along and says that the brothers came from the field. Kishumam, when they heard what happened, they were very angry. Ki nevala asa b'Yisrael, they did such a nevala, such a low thing, lishkab et bat Yaakov, to sleep, to lie with the bat Yaakov, v'chen lo yaseh. What is that language? V'chen lo yaseh. That's future. V'chen lo yaseh. This should not happen again. Anyway, they make a deal with them. Listen, we'd love to marry you, but we can't marry you because you're not circumcised. But if you're circumcised, then maybe we can have a camaraderie between our families. And they accept to circumcise themselves on the third day of the circumcision. Shimon and Levi come along and kill out the whole town. At that point, the pasuk says, Yaakov Abinu tells Shimon and Levi, hey, you put me in jeopardy over here. You want to kill out the whole town. Now all the neighbors that heard what you did, they're going to come and they're going to attack us. Bani metem espar, we're only a few people. V'ne'esfu alai v'ikuni. V'shmati ani u'beti. V'yomeru, and what do they answer? Hakzona ya'aseh et achotenu. Interesting. Hakzona ya'aseh et achotenu. Is our sister going to be a zona? Now this story over here, if we're correct, the first story of Lavan is Galut Bavel. Haran is in Bavel. The second story of Yaakov and Esav is Galut Paras Umadai. Incidentally, Hatsileni Na Miyad Otiyot Madai. So the third situation of Yaakov, it must be what? Keneged Galut? Yavan. Now, interestingly enough, where did Galut Yavan take place? It's the only Galut that took place when we were in Israel. Galut Bavel, we were in Bavel. There was an exile. Galut Paras Umadai, we were in Persia. Galut Yavan came to Israel and we were under their dominion in Eretz Israel. In the last 180 years of the Second Temple, we were under Galut Yavan, not in Yavan, not in Greece, in Israel. The Gemara says there was a gate on the eastern flank of the Beit HaMikdash. It was called the Gate of Shushan. Why would they have a Shushan gate on the Beit HaMikdash? For the same reason why sometimes you go to a shul and you see an American flag in the shul. Well, it's not the United Nations. What's the flag doing in the shul? Rav Moshe didn't like to have flags in the shul. But okay, they put a flag in the shul to show what? God bless America. Although we're here doing Jewish stuff, but we have loyalty. I pledge allegiance to the flag. So therefore, they had to make a Shushan gate as if to say, we pledge allegiance to Paras. Shushan is the capital. Therefore, they were under the dominion of Paras. And then later on, that's the first 52 years of the Beit HaMikdash, the first 100 years. And then the last 180 years, Paras fell away, and Yavan came in. And Galut Yavan was in Eretz Israel. It was in Eretz Israel. And where is the story of Dinah? In what city? Shechem. Where's Shechem? Yes. Eretz Yisrael. So therefore the location fits also. Now, in the case of Lavan, he wanted to kill us. In the case of Esav, he wanted to kill us, which is exactly what the Babylonians did and exactly what Haman wanted to do. Bikesh lashmi darog ulabed. Shechem and the people of Shechem had no intention to kill anybody. What was their intention? To assimilate. Which is exactly the kavanah of the Greeks. L'shakeham toratach u'la'abiram me'hukei resonach. And that's exactly what happened. You had the mityavnim where they went in mass and assimilated. And therefore you see over here in this story a very, very similar themes over here that took place. And that's why when Shimon and Levi came along and they took over the whole town. Now, isn't that a tremendous victory? Two people were able to overcome the many. Is that not the story of Hanukkah? Rabim yad ma'atim. We had the many, were able to go and take over the many. That's exactly what happened in Shimon and Levi. And I want to point out as well, one of the two was Levi. And which tribe is Levi? That's the tribe of the Kohanim. That's the Hashmonaim. So there were even the tribe that was responsible, at least halfway, for this victory, was the same tribe that was responsible for the victory of Hanukkah. And that's why when they see this event, Shimon Levi Kananeh saw that this is a precursor to something worse. And therefore they said, if we're not going to fight now, they're not going to be able to fight later on. And therefore they said, V'chen lo ya'aseh. That if we're not going to fight now, this is going to happen in the future. So therefore they were ready, had a precursor of a future event. And then what happens? They come back from the war, and Yaakov Avinu says, what's the big idea? What's going on? And they say, Hakzona ya'aseh ta'otenu. Now, the word... Anything to write? No, it doesn't work.
That's okay. That's
why.
I'll
know
for next time.
No, just you'll see. I'll speak it out. You'll get it. Says, I think maybe the Hatam Sofer or one of the tzaddikim. Now you know what happened during the time of Hanukkah. They made a gezerah that any betulah that would want to get married, first she would have to be violated by the governor. That was a rule in the times of the Yevanim. And the roots of that is what Shechem ben Hamor did to Dinah. He's the governor and he took Dinah. And that would end up becoming a tremendous precursor of the gezerah that the Greeks would do, that call Anoseta betula tibael tafsar tehila, that you have to go with the governor first. And that's what Bnei Yaakov was saying. Hakzonai yaset achotenu, not only now, but hakzonai yaset achotenu, meaning during the times of Hanukkah. And if you take the word kizona, chaf, zayin, vav, nun, he, it's almost exactly the letters of Hanukkah. Yeah, it's only one letter different. The Zion, move it, make the Zion of Hachizona to a Chet, and it's exactly Hanukkah. Huh? Which is okay. In Gematria, if you're one off, the Rosh says you're okay. So therefore, Kizona is Gematria Hanukkah. The only letter is the Zion to the Chet. So therefore, they're coming along to say, Akzona, Zeremis, the Hanukkah, which is going. So therefore, there is a Zeremis ben Torah in this galut over here. Now watch what happens right after the event. This is the cherry on the cake. So Yaakov leaves Shechem, and they kill all these people. And the Pasuk says, Vayisau, they start to travel, and they get to Bet El. Now what do they do when they get to Bet El? They get to Bet El, and the Pasuk says, they come along and they built the Mizbeach. Vayatsev Yaakov Maseba. He makes a Mizbeach. B'makom asher diber ito matzevet aven. And what does he do? Vayasech aleha nesech vayitzok aleha shamen. All of a sudden he pours oil on the matzeva. It's a strange thing. And therefore you see that right after what happened in the story of Dinah, the Torah is telling us he took some oil and he pours it on the Mizbeach, which is the name is already, which is Hanukkah Mizbeach in the times of Yaakov Avinu, which eventually would happen at the time. So there's the Mazim in the Torah, at least, to this holiday. Now, if you wanted to see one more remez in the Torah, to Hanukkah, even though it's not a holiday from the Torah, but everything's in the Torah. If you go to Parashat Emor, you'll see that the Torah lists all the Hagim. And it goes through from Pesach to Shavuot, and then it goes to Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. Mamash goes through all the holidays from beginning to end. And right after it finishes with Sukkot, so the Torah says, Ele mo'adei Hashem mikra'i kodesh, Hashem tikru otam b'mo'adam, v'idaber Moshe mo'adei Hashem l'b'nei Yisrael. That's it. It's over. Those are the holidays. Next pasuk. Now we're done with the holidays. There's no more holidays. Next pasuk. V'idaber Adonai Moshe l'mor, sab et b'nei Yisrael, v'yikru elech Hashem en zayit zach, take shemen zayit, katit lamaor, that's crushed properly, lamaor for lighting purposes, leha'alot ner tamid, in order to light the menorah. Ala menorah tehora, ya'aruch et anerot afnei Hashem tamid. Hold it. We're in Parashat Emor. The menorah is not in Parashat Emor, the menorah is not in Parashat Tzaveh. This is Mishkan stuff. From where to where, in the Parashat of the Mo'adim, does the Torah start to talk about the lighting of the menorah, Torah with Shemen? Eilat Pshar is, says the Baal HaRokeach, what's the holiday after Sukkot? Hanukkah. Not Thanksgiving, Hanukkah. Therefore, right after the Torah lists the story of Sukkot, the Torah comes along and says, take the oil. Otherwise, what is it? What is this parashat doing in the middle of nowhere? This menorah, Torah. So you see, where it is remazim from the Torah itself to this mitzvah of Hanukkah. And the lesson in conclusion for us is a big question: What did they have to go out of their way to use this oil in the first place? They could have used any oil, technically, based on the rabbinical rule of Tumah Hutra Betzibur. It's a famous question I ask on this. They could have used any oil, even Tameh oil. So why did they rely on miracles and you had to make all these, reliances that you only had enough for one day and had less for 8 days. They knew the law. They said, you know what? Very nice. It would have been nice if we found 8 packs. But we didn't find 8 packs. We found one. So you know what? One's not going to help us for 8 days. We're going to invoke the law of Tumah Hutra B'Sibur, and we're going to take Tameh oil. What was the... Why couldn't they do that? Why couldn't they just rely on Tameh oil? Can I ask a simple question? Everybody assumes, and the Greeks came in and they were metameh the oil. How do Greeks metameh oil?
Touch.
Begoyim do not have tumah min haTorah. A goy is not tameh min haTorah. There's no way a goy can metameh anything. I know you think he's tameh because that's the way they tell you how it is goyim the tameh. But spiritual tumah they don't have. So therefore, how did they metameh anything? It's not a question. Everybody's always worried about what did they do now? Now that everything was tameh, what did they do? And I'm asking a simple question. How did they metameh it? So most of the Rishonim learned it was tumah midrabanan. So therefore, the tumah that they had was a rabbinical tumah. Okay, so fine. So a rabbinical tum'ah. So for rabbinical tum'ah, it's only rabbinical. From the Torah, the oil was tahor. So why couldn't they use it? Unless you say, there's one of the mifarshim that say, hadush, that know that the oil was actually tameh min haTorah. Why? Because the Greeks came and they killed Jews in the Beit HaMikdash. And when they killed Jews in the Beit HaMikdash, the Jews were under the same ohel, and tumat ohel is tameh mideoraita. And therefore, it wasn't tameh mideoraita, it was tameh mideoraita. Okay, but still, you could use that oil. Even if it's tameh mideoraita. If there's no other choice, tumat abesibud, why did they be so stubborn to light only with this kosher oil, with that heter to light? Unless you say, and some of the Mefarshim say this, that the oil actually was not tameh, but the Greeks used it in Avodah Zarah. When it says v'tim'u, means they made it like it was tameh, but not that they actually physically defiled it. They used it in Avodah Zarah, and once it's used in Avodah Zarah, that's worse than regular tum'ah. You don't say tum'ah hutra b'sibur on something that was used in Avodah Zarah. And therefore they had no choice but to rely on this oil that they found. Because once, if you say it's tum'ah, then everybody has the question, hey, tum'ah utra b'simur. But if you learn, no, the way they defiled it was through Avodah Zarah, so then already you can't use it. And then they didn't have any other oils. Yes?
It says tum'ah.
Oh, so the Mepharisim, I have to explain. V'tim'u et kol ha-shimanim, they defiled it. How did they defile it? Through Avodah Zarah. Not the... the regular, you know, standard usage of the word tum'ah. And finally, we'll conclude with our thoughts for Hanukkah, is that explains that even though they might have had leniencies to light with tameh oil, according to those opinions, but they didn't choose it. Because they understood that since this is an inauguration moment, and this is a moment of a beginning, where we're re-inaugurating the menorah, so although tumah hutra b'sibud, that's already, if you're already in the middle of the process of lighting already. But if it's the first time you're lighting, you cannot build the foundation already on a compromise. Understand the difference? Yeah, tumat utra b'sibur. What is tumat utra b'sibur? If already you're in progress. If you're lighting the menorah every day, and now you ran out of oil, okay, continue lighting. But if this is the first time you're lighting it, which that's what this was, it was Hanukkah, it's the inauguration, there they were not going to rely on a compromise. And I saw a story to bring this point out. There was a great rabbi called the Aderet. The Aderet came from Europe to Eretz Yisrael to become the rabbi after Rabbi Shmuel Salant, who was the rabbi in Yerushalayim, and the Aderet took over. And he was a young rabbi, the Aderet. And when he comes to Eretz Yisrael, he just got off the boat, and right away Rabbi Salant says, I want to show everybody that you're the new rabbi. I want you to come to Sadir Kiddushin. The whole community is going to be here tonight, and I want them to show it. Rabbi Salant, fine, he comes to the wedding. Rabbi Aderet comes. And now, he's Mr. Aderet Kiddushin, so he has the wine in his hand. Zavri Maranan, Baruch Adah Hashem, Enukeru Melech HaOlam, Shakol Niyavet Baro. Shakol Niyavet Baro? So he says, Baruch Adah Hashem, Enukeru Melech HaOlam, Bore Pera Gefen. Now, the people are going crazy. First of all, that he made Shakol on wine, that's already what kind of rabbi. He doesn't know the better kind of wine. So, okay, they said, okay, maybe it was white wine. But even so, the worst problem with this rabbi is if you made shakol on wine, you don't say. So the fact that he corrected himself, I mean, given, he doubled down on the mistake. And now the people are saying, this is the new rabbi. So the Aderet then explained himself. In an unbelievable lumdus, unbelievable savara. He says, well, you don't think I know that if you make shakol on Geffen, you yotze? But not in this case. Because in this case, who's really supposed to make the beracha on the wine? The Hatan. The Hatan nominated me as a shaliach. And when you nominate somebody as a shaliach, he's nominating it for me to do it the right way, not a bidiabad way. He's starting his wedding off. This is the first moment of his wedding. We're going to start his wedding off now with a shako, which is bidiabad. When you're a shaliach for somebody else, I didn't make you a shaliach to become a shakol on a Geffen. I made you my shaliach to do it right. And then his point was, now that you're starting your marriage, it's a chinuch habayit. And a chinuch habayit, there's no compromise. There's no b'yabayit, you made a joke. There you have to do it correct. And he used that story to see the same thing in the menorah. Although they were able to make some leniencies, but they didn't take the leniencies. And that might explain why, when it comes to Hanukkah, even though the Gemara says you could light one candle a night, but what does everybody else do? Mahadrin, min Mahadrin. Everybody all of a sudden becomes very, very, very firm on Hanukkah. Mahadrin, even though when it comes to other mitzvot, what's the minimum? And by the way, most people don't even know there's a minimum on Hanukkah. If you would go to some of your friends and say, what do you light all these candles for? Just light one. Are you allowed to do that? Nobody ever told me that. That means Mahadrin becomes the standard. Why? Because we're commemorating what they did. They went and they did something above and beyond. They could have relied on Tumahutra B'Sibur, but they didn't. They relied on the, they knew that it was Hanukkah, and therefore we take the same approach. All right, then we'll stop over here.